Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
Good morning, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in. This is Atlanta Legal Experts Radio. I am your host, Emily Rowell, with Peachtree Offices, and we have a nice lineup here today. Good morning.
Good morning.
Ryan, how are you today?
Doing well, thank you. It's Tuesday, it's 8 a.m., and it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
And we're here.
Yes. Beautiful day in Buckhead.
And we have a great lineup this morning. We have Greg Jacobs with Jacobs & King. Good morning.
Good morning, Emily.
Thank you so much for being here. What are you going to talk about today?
I'm going to talk about estate planning and asset protection planning.
Awesome. Awesome. I look forward to that. And we have the one and only Merlin Earle. Good morning, Merlin.
Good morning
to you.
Hi.
He is with Bruce Hagen at Hagen Law Office.
That's right.
And you're going to be talking about?
A little bit of personal injury.
Awesome. Awesome. So, thank you so much. Yes. And we have Sean Ditzel with Kessler and Solomiani.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well.
Thank you for being here. And so you're going to talk a little bit about, you guys do some family law?
We do exclusively family law. I'm going to be talking some about child support and child support modifications this morning, and then maybe a little bit about a hot topic. I think a good discussion of the pending same-sex marriage case should be in order.
So you guys stay tuned so you can hear all about that. We also have Crystal James Sermons this morning, and she will be joining us. She is with Crystal Sermons, LLC, and she is a civil rights activist, and we're glad to have her in the studio as well. Just a reminder to all of our listeners, the show has been brought to you by Peachtree Offices. They help attorneys establish their practices all throughout Atlanta by providing office space and virtual office space. It has also been brought to you by 3A Law Practice Management, and they help attorneys start and build their practice, and by Atlanta's own John Marshall Law School. So you can go to the website at atlantalegalexperts.com, and you can see all of the guests here today, all of their bios, and all of the sponsors as well. So,
some great sponsors you have there.
Yes, I'm ready to go.
All right. So our first guest, my pleasure to introduce, is Greg Jacobs, managing partner. Greg has a bachelor's degree in accounting from the University of Florida, where he graduated from law school. In addition, Greg is a certified financial planner. In addition to over 20 years of legal experience, Greg has advised clients in accounting, finance, and financial planning. Greg's practice focus is estate planning, asset protection planning, elder law, and corporate planning for closely held business owners. Welcome, Mr. Greg Jacobs.
Well, thank you for having me.
So tell me a little bit about you. How did you get to where you are today?
Well, I've been in Atlanta since 1992. Grew up in South Florida, and decided to make my way to Atlanta and started the law practice in 92. And as I was introduced, I've had experience not only practicing law, but working for accounting firms, working in banks, and really gives me sort of a broader perspective to advise our clients.
Awesome. Awesome. So tell me, what happens to a person's property if they die without a will?
Well, unfortunately, that's, what we like to tell our clients is everybody has a will. It's either the one you write or the one the state mandates for you. And, lots of people sort of make the assumption that, I don't have anything or it'll just go to who I want anyway. But a lot of times first of all, people have more than they think they do.
Right.
Very often through life insurance. And secondly, some of the default rules are just not what you would think they are. Mm-hmm. For example, right now we have a case where ex-husband died without a will, and in his case, he left millions of dollars to his minor 16-year-old daughter, which has caused lots of problems, and when she turns 18, it's going to cause even more problems potentially.
Sure. Sure.
But one of the other sort of common misconceptions is that if you are married and have children, it doesn't automatically go to the spouse. Essentially, the spouse takes a child share. So again, somebody dies without a will, and the property can go to minor children. But even, maybe more significantly, the people that are in charge of your will is mm-hmm. decided by the state and causes lots of infighting, lots of times with good intentions, but everybody thinks that they are the right person for the job.
Sure. So even just with life insurance alone, That doesn't guarantee that the beneficiaries get all of that money. Is that correct?
Or well, there's who is named as the beneficiary can be different. For example, sometimes sure. the estate is named, sometimes children are named, and really the answer is a very very simple plan will resolve all these issues.
Gotcha. So who needs asset protection planning?
Really, anybody who has assets that they would not like to be subject to the claims of creditors and predators. Okay. You know, the time to do asset protection planning is when there's not a problem. When the lawsuit has happened, in Sean's case, you know, when someone's filing for divorce and they call me and say, "How do I protect my assets?" You know, while there may be some things you can do, for the large part, you know, you really miss the opportunity. The opportunity to do asset protection planning is when there's not potential claims by creditors.
Sure.
When sort of the seas are calm is really the perfect time to do it. And I would say any adult who has assets to lose ought to be thinking about doing
any kind of assets. It doesn't have to be like a lot.
Correct. And yeah. a lot of times it's very simple things that they could have done with, you know, and I tell people it's like buying an extra insurance policy by being prudent and planning in advance.
So tell me, how often do they need to update their plans, their estate plans?
So it's kind of like going to the doctor, you know, sort of in a perfect world, you're going to do it every year. Most people, when they're younger, don't go to the doctor every year.
Sure.
As you age, you should be going to the doctor more often, and more things can happen. There's more variables.
Right.
Estate planning is really the same. When we're doing planning for people in their 20s and 30s, you know, very often, you know, it's every 5 years at best. But as they get into their 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, you know, quite often it's you know, particularly people who have substantial assets, it's
sure.
an annual meeting. And one of the things that we like to do is put our clients on a maintenance plan so that there's proactive updating of their plan. We tell our clients that, you know, when you do an estate plan, it's like driving a car off the lot. As soon as you go out the door, while it may be the perfect plan when you're here, there's so many variables. You know, what are your assets? What's the tax situation going to be? What are you going to want? You know, what's the family life going to be? Those things change, constantly change. Life mm-hmm. is not a straight line.
Sure.
And so keeping those things updated is very important to have an effective plan.
Yeah, and I know when things are calm, people aren't thinking about that either.
That's right. That's right. And so oftentimes what happens is they see a friend has an experience or another family member, and they say, "Oh boy, I better get my stuff in order."
Sure. So tell me about how has the estate planning practice changed in the last 20 years?
It's really changed quite substantially. When I first started practicing law, and for many years, the estate tax exemption was $600,000, and then for many years it was $1 million. Which again, when you're talking about, you know, even for people who don't perceive themselves to have a substantial net worth, mm-hmm. if they're a young couple, young professionals that might have a couple million dollars of life insurance. Well, mm-hmm. in the early days when the sort of the family exemption was $1 million or $2 million, much of the planning had to do with taxes. Well, now today the estate tax exemption is $5.4 million per person. So really, even with life insurance, mm-hmm. the substantial majority of people are under that. And so the focus on the planning side is less to do with tax and more to do with sort of real life issues. But the other dynamic is the aging population. What we're seeing in our practice is we have many more clients today in their 80s and 90s, and what's wow. happened in many of those cases, many of those folks are people that are from modest means, live modest lives, but millionaires next door. All of a sudden, you know, the child who's in his 50s discovers that, whoa, dad's worth, you know, $2.5 million because
sure.
he saved, you know, was a good saver, and then all of a sudden one child decides that maybe they're more entitled to the other, and as the parents in many cases are not incapacitated but have diminished capacity, we are just seeing lots of infighting between family members as you know, sort of fighting over what they believe to be their entitlement, and many are sort of surprised to find out that the law, you know, there is no entitlement until you're deceased, but lots of what we see, lots of elder abuse, financial elder abuse,
wow.
and really are encouraging our clients to be more proactive, especially while they have all of their faculties to get their affairs
sure.
in order.
Wow, So also, I think another change is a lot of people are working more. They think they're going to retire at a certain age like their parents did, and it's just not the case anymore, so they're starting to work more later in life. And do you find that also?
Absolutely. I think we have for two reasons. I think one is, you know, economically people need to work more, but in many cases too, they're sort of bored. You know, I had one client say, you know, I can only play so many rounds of bad golf.
Right. That's a good point.
And they get bored, and you know, they don't maybe have to work for the money, but it gives them
something
a purpose. It gives them something to do, and oftentimes because they were good at making money, that results in, you know, sort of more economic issues coming in.
Yeah. So tell me, let's go to the business owner side briefly. What are some common mistakes that they make, the business owners?
So business owners, you know, is very similar to the estate plan in the you know, failure to plan is a plan to fail. And so quite often, you know, what I would say one of the biggest issues that we just see over and over again is they you know, let's say you have two partners, they form a business. And they, you know, at first it has no value, and then the value grows, and then all of a sudden they figure out that they don't like each other, or you know, one's doing all the work and the other one isn't, and there's not a plan to you know, how to divide up how the business ought to be divided up,
sure.
and it gets very much like a divorce, and you know, same sorts of issues. They don't have something predetermined in place. And, you know, everybody says, I just want to be fair. But they all have dramatically different definitions of what fairness is. So the same sort of thing on the tax side, you know, planning in advance so that they're not using the wrong type of vehicle to hold their assets, because many times they come to see us when it's too late, they've created value. And in order to do what we want to do, it's going to cause a big taxable event, or sometimes we can plan our way out of it, mm-hmm. but then it adds complexity that they don't necessarily love.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So you say, like, as soon as you're starting up a business, you have all that in place.
Yeah. I mean, look, many people, we see it all the time. Hey, I went online and formed my LLC. You know,
right.
that is not a difficult task, but that's not really where the value is. The value is in the planning and the other things that you need, and asking, is the LLC the right vehicle? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Maybe it's an LLC in a different jurisdiction. We use Delaware LLCs, for example, in our planning all the time. You know, seeking the legal advice, and really not being penny wise, pound foolish.
Which you feel like you have to when you're starting. You have no money when you're starting a business, but at the same time, you can't afford not to.
Well, and what I tell people in that situation all the time is come in for the consultation. The 1 hour is worth it, because then it's a dynamic process. That doesn't mean you have to do it all on day one, but you know, maybe when you have a little money in the bank 6 months from now or a year from now, it's time to revisit that issue. Don't wait until, you know, it's sort of fully mature before you address some of these issues.
Right. Well, thank you so much for being here with us today. If you can let our listeners know how they can reach you.
They can reach us by telephone at 404-920-4490. They can visit our website at www.jacobsking.com. That's JACOBSKING.com, or certainly feel free to send me an email directly at greg@jacobsking.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here this morning. And I just want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Atlanta Legal Experts Radio, and I'm your host, Emily Rowell, with Peachtree Offices. And we have Merlin Earle here today. Ryan?
Yes. Merlin began his legal career in Georgia as a prosecutor for Fulton County. He served as an assistant solicitor general, prosecuting misdemeanors. Greeted with success and great enjoyment, Merlin stepped up to the next level and became an assistant district attorney, prosecuting felonies. Mr. Earle wrapped up his career as a prosecutor by creating the major narcotics unit in Fulton County, prosecuting major drug trafficking. He switched to a civil practice and became a civil trial attorney for the insurance giant state firm. Merlin represented State Farm for over 10 years, saving the insurance giant millions of dollars. Merlin became a civil trial attorney when he joined Bruce Hagan in 2011. This team has become one of Georgia's most formidable personal injury trial attorney firms in Atlanta. Over the past 4 years, they have completed almost 60 jury trials and have gotten millions for their clients. The insurance companies know this team quite well. Let's welcome Mr. Merlin Earle.
Good morning.
How you doing this morning?
Well, well, good to see you.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here.
Thanks.
Thank you. So tell me how you got into where you are today. I love asking that first. I want to hear the story.
Well, you know, having been on the other side with State Farm for 10 years, it was a smooth and beautiful transition going to the plaintiff side. So it's been fun.
Yeah.
And getting better by the day.
So you know their side, so you can use your expertise.
Yeah, that's kind of how they know it. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me, if I am involved in a car wreck, how do I find the appropriate medical treatment? And what if I don't have insurance, medical insurance?
Well, it is not a problem at all. It certainly is good if you do, but to come out of pocket for medical treatment after being involved in a car wreck, it's not something you really would want to do. In our situation, and many of the personal injury firms around Atlanta and Georgia, lawyers have a good working relationship with medical practitioners who provide care and treatment for people who have been involved in car wrecks. And so we have plenty of specialists who we refer incoming clients to, specialists in orthopedic, chiropractic, physical therapy, whatever the needs are. There are people who we can suggest, give them options, you know, based on their needs and their circumstances. Mm-hmm. And so it works out, because when you've been involved in a car wreck, and then, like you say, in a situation where you don't have medical insurance, it can be quite a concern. Mm-hmm. And so they will take patients, you know, on a lien basis, and, you know, based on the outcome of the case, mm-hmm. they will, you know, work with them, you know, in their financial circumstances.
So in your opinion, what's the first thing you should do if you get in a wreck?
First thing you should do is call the police. That's the first
gotcha.
Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are situations where parties have been involved in a car wreck, and they think on the scene they can just deal with it, you know, themselves, mm-hmm. and sort of resolve the situation. Sometimes people have discussions and conversations. Well, if I, you know, can I just pay you this, and, you know, we just deal with it and report to our insurance companies? And sometimes that works out. Sometimes it doesn't. And
right.
and there can be, I wouldn't say catastrophic consequences, but sometimes not good. And you end up regretting not calling the police.
I had gotten in a wreck, and it was very minor, but I didn't realize how much it actually did hurt me. Somebody rear-ended me. It was not that drastic, but we called the police, and we waited forever and ever and ever and ever. And finally we just said, you know what, forget it. I took pictures, thank God. And I even took pictures of the driver's license. But it turns around, she was very nice and very, you know, willing to do whatever. And it turns around that my insurance company couldn't get their insurance company to pay because her husband said it never happened.
Right.
So it didn't have anything to do with her.
That's right.
So you didn't think that that was going to happen, but her husband was like, no, that never happened.
And exactly. And so while you want to take people at their word, you know, giving the trust factor, after the fact, a little bit of discussion, and sometimes things change.
I don't know what they're talking about.
And God forbid you're in a situation where the person just doesn't even stop, and they just or pretend like they're going to stop, and they keep going. And then you really have to call the police.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Yeah.
So tell me, is mediation a good way to get your case resolved?
It is. It's an effective, efficient way to get your case resolved, because sometimes cases can take, years to get resolved if you strictly rely on the court system.
Mm-hmm.
Cases can take 2, 3, 5 years to get resolved. And some of the ones that take 5 years, they're not always the most complex cases. But certainly if the case has some complex, you know, different issues, it can drag and drag and drag, and particularly depending on which court the case is in,
mm-hmm.
that can affect, you know, the length of the case as well. Mediation is good because you have control over the outcome as opposed to 12 strangers. So
gotcha.
if you decide, you know, I want to go to trial, which that's what we specialize in. We specialize in, you know, trials, which is, you know, what was announced earlier. We have no problem doing that. But if you want to sort of speed it up a little bit and use private mediation, that's a good option. You have, you know, a good idea of, you know, what you're getting yourself into. Mm-hmm. If you do that, you have a mediation expense, you know, as opposed to trial, which you're then you loading up with, you know, depositions, medical expert depositions, potentially travel, exhibits. That can be thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, which you may not have to incur. Now, if you are unsuccessful at mediation, then it's time to switch and you know, load up, get ready for trial.
So it kind of speeds it. It could speed it up. It could be better because you're in more control. And then also you might be saving tons of money.
Exactly. Exactly.
Tell me,
just to add this, you know, sometimes people are concerned about the drain of trial, having to set aside days and planning and just the whole experience of going to trial and having to sit there and confront 12 strangers. That in and of itself can be a stressful experience.
Sure.
So you also eliminate that factor because going to trial, there is the unknown of, you know, what is this going to be like?
And you've already been in that stressful experience by getting in the accident or getting injured somehow or some way, and it's just adding to it.
And you just want to get it over with.
Right.
You know, but certainly with the best outcome possible.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Ryan McPherson here. Just a couple of questions about accidents and how they happen. Is someone always at fault for an accident? Is there someone who can always be blamed for the accident, or do things just happen sometimes?
That's an interesting question, because a jury, say, for example, you go to trial and a jury decides, well, yeah, this person sued the other person and then they don't award damages. I had a case, had a trial, I don't know if it was this year or last year, and the jury says, well, we believe the person was at fault, but we're not going to award damages. So usually the jury, if it's a jury trial, they're going to find for one side or the other, but it doesn't necessarily result in damages. So we call it, still call that a defense verdict. That's a defense verdict where the person who's being sued is not being held responsible for the accident.
Well, that's interesting. So they are not being, you know, monetarily, you know, penalized.
Correct.
For the accident, but they still accept blame, or still does that go on their record? How does that work out?
I suppose the insurance company would eventually know that their client was held responsible for the accident, but there are no financial consequences as it relates to damages being the person is not being punished financially, you know, for the accident.
Right. You know, you see all these pictures on the sides of buses and billboards and commercials on TV running, you know, in between Judge Judy on the afternoons. It's like it just seems there's a culture out there today that, you know, if something happens, whether it's a minor fender bender or a serious accident where somebody's at fault, that people want to jump all over and get involved with that. And I don't know if that's kind of kind of speaks to the times we're in, and somebody always wants to blame someone else for the accidents. And
I was wondering when Judge Judy was going to be mentioned on my show. It's been a year. We went a whole year.
Those pink buses are painful.
I know. But, you know, speaking from the legal profession and your side of the fence there, someone who represents serious injuries and serious cases, you know, how does that play into your, and how do you vet some of these accidents that people come to you with to make sure this is, you know, a case that you want to take on?
Yeah. When a client comes in, one of the first things I ask them to do is, I mean, you got to be completely honest with me. I need to know, because down the road, I mean, surprises are, I mean, terrible. You know, when you find out new facts, new information about the case that the client didn't tell you about from the very beginning, for me as a lawyer, that is just, I mean, that's unfortunately very, very bad, and it's stunning to discover things that you should have known 2 years ago,
right,
that you find out later. That's very damning and disheartening. And so to have to make that decision to change the plan 2 years later, or realize that the case is not what you thought it was 2 years later, it's just not good.
Right.
So I impress upon the clients at the very beginning, day one, you tell me, you give me the real deal right now, because if you don't, I mean, I'm your lawyer. I can deal with the facts as
right.
they are, and I have to. But I can't deal with, you know, lies and
deceit.
You know, deceit.
Yep.
You know.
Plus, it's probably going to come out later on anyway.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It will. And then you're handcuffed. You know, perfect situation. Woman says, you know, 2 years into the case, well, I know you're my attorney, and I got to tell you this. I was like, oh, my God. You know, so you decided to tell me this 2 years later. So it happens because people are just nervous, and they don't trust that sometimes they don't trust the system,
right.
you know.
Yeah.
And they look for ways on either side. That goes, that's not just, I mean, it's on either side of the, you know, either side of the coin. They don't trust it. They're nervous, and they figure that, you know, they can navigate their way around the truth. And that's why we have a jury system to ferret out some things that don't always surface. And so we have 12 people who sit there, and they are the, you know, fact finders, and they sort of ferret out what's true and what's not.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So tell me, is it advisable, after you're telling me all this, to represent yourself then?
Sometimes it's okay. Our legal system allows you to do that. And it's good that it does, because every case does not require, deserve a jury trial. Mm-hmm. Every case does not, you know, need to fully go through the legal system. We have a magistrate system where people can represent themselves if they choose. However, there's a cap, there's a limit in terms of how much they can claim, $15,000 in magistrate court.
Okay.
Some cases are very, very, you know, like the one you were talking about. It's very possible that you could have filed in magistrate court, represented yourself, because it just is not that complex. You
right.
can do it. You can handle it. And
it's
a lot of
people.
It's
pretty obvious what happened.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the magistrate judges, they understand. They're very lenient when people come in and they represent themselves. Mm-hmm. However, before you do that, you might want to consult with a lawyer
sure.
who can advise you that this is something that you can do on your own. Rather than
whether it is or it isn't.
Right, right. And I certainly have no problem doing that with potential clients who come in. And I'll tell them, you know, this is something that you might want to consider handling yourself. You can do it, and we'll advise them, this is what you need to do. Consider when you make a demand, call the insurance company. This is what you can expect. Because when all is said and done, some of those smaller cases, it's not worth it for them to have me represent them, because in the end, my fees are going to consume a lot of what could have gone into their pocket.
Gotcha.
And so it's not worth it. And
it shows that you care for their best.
And that's what it's all about.
Yeah. So unlike what happened to me, what if I actually caused the accident and I had passengers with me? What are the possibilities of things that could happen?
Well, if you have friends, family members in a car with you, and you're the one that actually caused the accident, they could actually sue you.
Yes.
And it happens. It's a sensitive situation where someone you know has been injured in an accident, and it was actually your fault. You want them to be taken care of. You want them, you know, to exercise their rights, and for them to do that might end up with you being sued.
Right.
And you have to know that that's the unfortunate circumstance. It happens. Because you could be sued by them and the person who you hit.
Right. Wow.
Both.
Okay.
And so you have exposure, you know, coming from, you know, more than one angle.
Right.
Scary. Yeah, that can happen. So you might, be thinking, well, this is my brother-in-law. It's no different than if...
Oh, he'd sue me in a heartbeat. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Tim,
I love you.
It's no different than if you had a dinner party at your house and you have these guests and you're out on the deck and your deck collapses.
Right.
There are going to be people that are going to sue you.
Right, yeah.
You know, if they're injured. And they have a right to do that. So
get insurance.
You must have it.
and do asset protection planning.
It's sufficient, you know.
Yeah, there you go. That's funny. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for being on with us today. We really appreciate you being here. If you could tell our listeners how they can reach you.
They can reach me by way of email, Merlin, it's MYRLIN at Hagen, HAGEN -law.com. Telephone number is 404-522-7553. And our website is Hagen, HAGEN -law.com.
Thanks again.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So we have Crystal Sermons in the room with us. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm well, and you?
Good. Thank you for being here. Brian?
All right. Attorney Crystal James Sermons is an accomplished attorney, educator, leader, and motivator that has only begun to make her mark on the world. Born in Broxton, Georgia, Attorney Sermons received her Bachelor's of Science degree from Clark Atlanta University, her Master's of Public Health from Rollins School of Public Health at Emory University, her Juris Doctorate from University of Houston, and her License to Practice Law from the state of Georgia, all by the age of 26. She has been able to not only work within her science and public health interest, she has also maintained a successful legal practices that focuses on mainly on the areas of civil rights issues, which include labor and employment issues, voting irregularities, criminal law, personal injury, as well as domestic relations. With more than 16 years of private practice experience in offices in Atlanta, Georgia, and Ocilla, Georgia, Attorney James continues to seek opportunities to utilize her unique training and background to assist the clients that she serves. Attorney Crystal James is also a mother and a proud member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated. Welcome, Attorney Crystal James Sermons.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Yes, thank you for being here. Tell me how you got into all this, which
kinda,
is a lot.
He kind of gave you a little bit of the journey. I did start as a biology major at Clark Atlanta University. Never intended to go to medical school, so was always looking for an avenue to use that degree. I continued on to Emory to get a master's in public health with a concentration in environmental and occupational health. And in that aspect, really intended to do policy and work and not really do any litigation. Was actually convinced to go to law school instead of get a PhD in policy, which was my original intent. And once I did that, I was very thankful in being able to marry those degrees, working in health policy as well as working in the actual private practice, has been very useful for me, and also able to help my clients in a lot of different unique ways.
So it has helped your practice, all of these degrees.
Yeah, it has. It has taken a while for people to kind of understand the marriage, and so I ended up creating two separate entities. I also have a consulting company where I do a lot of my public health practice and program evaluation. However, the legal practice also pulled from those degrees, especially when I deal with personal injury and medical malpractice cases.
Gotcha. Mm. So tell me about your solo practice and the challenges that you face as a solo practitioner and how you've overcome them.
Well, I truly believe that the civil rights issue of our day and our time is focused around the workplace and in employment discrimination. I think that it happens in a lot of aspects, and it's not just based upon race, which of course is one that you hear a lot about, but a lot of age discrimination occurs as well, especially when the downturn in the economy happened. You had a lot of older workers who were pushed out of the workforce in favor of younger employers, and specifically for being able to decrease the amount of payroll that they have to put out.
And while, right, they've been there for a while, they've been earning all those reviews every year and getting more money, making more salary, and then all of a sudden here comes some hotshot from college
that pretty much knows how to do the same thing, will do it for much cheaper.
Yep.
And fortunately, the laws in our country does provide that in order to prevent our older workers, that in order for you to do that, there have to be certain things that take place. And that our employees that have put in time and have been an asset to a company shouldn't be forced out simply because of they've reached an earning cap or they're able to demand a much higher salary. And so helping people to understand when and how they can pursue those claims has been a large part of my practice for many years. It has, you know, just walking people through the process of understanding whether or not the company that they work for is one that's actually subject to Title VII and subject to the Civil Rights Act of 1964 so that they can understand when they actually do have a claim. And also helping even women, you know, pregnancy is a big issue in regards to not only hiring but also maintaining employment. And a lot of times women don't understand that they can't be terminated just because they're pregnant or they disclose that they're pregnant. Now, establishing the actual why of why you have been terminated is also a very difficult task. It's not something that's always very easy.
Clear.
Yeah. And some employers, you know, the ones that the smaller ones that don't necessarily know better, many times will make the mistakes of putting something in writing or saying something that's heard by a third party that is more readily provable. In those cases, usually resolve, as my colleague was talking about, through mediation and early on in the process. But for the most part, it's usually more difficult to get that smoking gun in civil rights and employment cases.
Where they know themselves.
Yes, they know. But I tell my clients all the time, there's what you know and what I can prove.
Right.
They don't always line up.
So it sounds like you really represent them and you've really overcome that yourself. Have you had anything personally that happened that you kind of lead you to that? Can I ask you that? Or
I've had several things. I had the opportunity with my scientific background. I had the opportunity to explore going into patent law and had an opportunity to go to a Fortune 500 company and work in their patent division over the summer and experienced some very blatant racism. And it actually was told to my face that they did not intend to help me simply because of my race and my gender. And, you know, it's amazing. I was flabbergasted myself.
Wow.
It was
hate that I'm laughing. I'm just shocked, you know.
I was too, and I was there for 10 weeks. And I had to endure that. But I learned in that situation, it gave me a very intimate understanding of what that feels like to be in that kind of hostile work environment. Mm-hmm. And it actually shaped my practice. So I thank him all the time because
there
it helped me focus on what I decide what I was going to focus on in my private practice.
That's awesome. So you are also, you talked about your consulting company that you're the CEO of. Can you share with the audience the scope and the purpose of that company?
Well, Crystalis International Consulting was really developed so that I could, as I said earlier, really marry more of the different skills I was able to learn by gathering the different degrees that I have. And also because I have a lot of colleagues and friends that are not in medicine and working in public health because that was the role that I originally was on. They have different needs that I can help them to address. And that comes into play and helps me marry it in a way that just being simply their attorney doesn't necessarily give me the opportunity to do. And also, in the state of Georgia, you're not allowed to have non-attorneys work in a law firm and split fees. And so I had to have another mechanism in order to hire other consultants to assist in that process. But the marriage, or I think the beauty of the marriage, is that even for some of my colleagues and friends, like one example is Dr. Burt, who opened her OBGYN office in Conyers. I was able to help her set up her practice and develop her employee handbook to help keep her out of trouble and not have people like me or from her employees try to sue her, and also to handle some of her contract issues while I was also able to help give her some advice on how setting up some of her medical billing and the type of different type of persons that she should contract with in order to ensure that she doesn't run into some of the issues that I've seen on the litigation side.
Wow, you're very well-rounded.
Thank you.
I was going to say, Ryan McPherson here, you certainly accomplished at such a young age, very educated, well-rounded, as Emily said. So how do you find time to get involved in some of these community issues or community involvement with you're managing several companies?
I don't sleep much. But
you need sleep.
It is... really I don't do this by myself in a vacuum, and that's the one of the blessings of Chrysalis is being able to pull in other expertise when I need to staff up to do certain projects, and that has been a tremendous help. Also, having a wonderful legal assistant that helps me, Sabrina Thigpen. I hope you're listening. Yeah.
She Shout out helps to Sabrina,
me, exactly, because
right?
She kind of manages both worlds for me and tells me where I'm supposed to be and what time to get there. So that helps us tremendously as well. But it's important, and a lot of my client base really has come from my community service. I have an opportunity to serve on the board for a charter school, in DeKalb County. And through those relationships, I've been able to build establish relationships that have led to clients. And so being able to blend both and have my service also help in my practice has been useful. And also it has allowed me to bring some of the other colleagues that I have in different industries and get them involved in things that they may not have considered but for me having my hands in a lot of different pots.
And I imagine experiencing discrimination in the workplace has got to be a difficult position to be in. You don't want to lose your job. You don't want to force yourself into a position where you could possibly lose your job and then lose your income and your livelihood. So how would you advise someone or what would they steps they should take before coming seeing you? And kind of second part would be, do they need to collect evidence beforehand somehow, some way to present to you so you can then go forward with your case? What are some of your thoughts on that?
The collection of evidence is very important, but also advise my clients that you have to operate within the rules of your company. You can't be there on company time, you know, trying to gather your evidence and put together your case. You're still obligated to do the work that you're hired to do while you're there. And the biggest thing that I try to impress upon my clients once they come in the door is that once they file this claim, you are a target. Mm-hmm. They will now be looking at you in a different way. So you need to understand that you need to be on time. You need to take only your required lunch. Mm-hmm. You need to leave after time. You need to obey all of the rules. You need to understand the handbook better than anyone else, because now all of the rules will apply most specifically to you, because they will be looking for a legitimate way to be able to actually terminate your employment.
What are some of the laws in Georgia as far as concerned, like secretly recording someone at the office place if they're using, you know, not such nice language or anything like that? How would you advise that?
Well, the laws in Georgia do stipulate that at least one person in the room does have to know that there's a recording going on. And if you have been asked, or if there's a company policy that their conversations are not to be recorded, you have to abide by that. Mm-hmm. And that will preclude you from using that evidence. Many times, people who are in the situation do carry mini recorders or body recorders and things that are said to them in passing or get recorded, and they become very useful information. And in the mediation and arbitration process, sometimes having that information helps that process, even if it may not be admissible in court. It is a useful tool to have available when you're at the earlier stages to try to get it resolved before you have to go through the litigation process. Yeah. As mentioned earlier, that process can be a very long and extended one. And especially if you still have to work in that environment, it can be a pretty uncomfortable situation, not only for the employee, but for employers as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The language that you use sometimes may only happens behind closed doors in passing.
Absolutely.
And said in such a way that, you know, well, you prove it. It's your word against mine. And that's good. The state of Georgia, you only need to have one person be knowledgeable of the recording. And you know, may not advise someone to do that. But if you find yourself stuck out there and nowhere to go, you know, you have the right to stand up for yourself.
Absolutely. And, you know, as it occurred in my situation, it was always one-on-one conversations where, you know, I was subjected to the verbal abuse. And as an intern, I felt I had no choice but to absorb it and to take it, or either just choose to leave. And at that point, I was not going to give him the satisfaction of running me out. So we both had a tough summer.
So after practicing for 15 years, are you still passionate? To me, you sound very passionate about what you do.
there, whenever I start to feel like, okay, there's got to be a better way to make a living. there's usually a case that reminds me why I want to do this. And most recently got involved in a voter irregularity case down in South Georgia. Most people will still be amazed to believe that we still have instances where people are disenfranchised by the vote simply because they feel their vote is not counted, or that the rules and the laws that are currently in place in the state of Georgia, the loopholes have been exploited to such that people are allowed to pretty much fix contest. And yeah. And we've had, you know, quite a few of those, and I'm dealing with one right now in rural Georgia, which is where I'm from. And a lot of that happens where you have certain families that have been in control of politics for many generations, and they absolutely refuse to give up that that power and that control, and are not beyond cheating to get it done.
Wow. So you're a fighter.
I have to be.
I say so.
Yeah. So anything you're looking forward to in the future for your firm, for your life, for your practice?
Well, of course, I would love to grow. I do have other attorneys that are of counsel with the firm, and again, we muscle up for bigger cases. And Jerry Caldwell, who's in private practice as well, Sylvia Horde Cobb, who's also in private practice, they are of counsel to the firm. And so on specific types of cases, it's not necessarily just me in my mind. I am definitely a proponent of synergy and having a team when necessary. But I'm looking forward to the opportunity to not just be the business, but also be able to sit back and help others come along this path as well.
And after all this time, it seems like you deserve that.
Thank you.
Where are you located?
I am located downtown at 235 Peachtree Street here in Atlanta, and also in Ocala, Georgia, which is, for those people who don't know, right down 75.
Okay.
However, I can be reached at 404-287-2382. That is my main office number, and you can make an appointment for either office at that number, as well as we do have a web presence at www.sermonslawfirm.com. And being affiliated with Morehouse College, I had a professor that created a very interesting little Ask Crystal icon there that you can actually ask me questions, and my voice responds to you. And so some of the employment questions that we were not able to cover today, if you have them, you can go to the website and get those questions answered.
Well, we are glad to have you here today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And just to remind our listeners, we are listening to Atlanta Legal Experts Radio, and our our sponsors for today are Peachtree Offices, where you can start and establish a practice anywhere in Atlanta, and 3A Law Practice Management, where they help attorneys start and grow their practice, and Atlanta's own John Marshall Law School. And you can see all of their information on AtlantaLegalExperts.com. And we have, last but not least, Sean Ditzel with Kessler and Solomiani. He has been so quiet and so patient.
I'm ready. I'm ready to just spill it all now.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go.
All right. Mr. Ditzel was born in Baltimore, Maryland, and moved to Atlanta, Georgia at a very early age after graduating at the top of his class at the Georgia State University, where he was named James Madison Scholar for Political Science. He earned his Juris Doctor from the University of Georgia Law School in 2006. Domestic relations law has been Mr. Ditzel's exclusive area of legal practice. He has attained considerable litigation and courtroom experience in matters ranging from divorce, child support, custody, legitimation, paternity, and adoption. Mr. Ditzel has represented a variety of clients throughout the state of Georgia, including many prominent athletes, entertainers, and executives. Mr. Ditzel has been recognized as a rising star by the Super Lawyers magazine for his exemplary work in domestic relations law. Mr. Ditzel is extremely active in leadership positions in various local and state bar organizations, and is also a trained guardian ad litem for the Atlanta Volunteers Lawyers Foundation. Mr. Ditzel and his wife, Robin, make their home in Marietta, Georgia, with their dog, George.
I love it.
Now you have it all.
Yeah.
There it is.
So tell me how you got to where you are.
Well, what wasn't covered there, I guess, is I started out at a firm not Kessler and Soleimani. It was called Tally Richardson and Cable out in Paulding County, which is where I went to high school. I cut my teeth out there and learned how to try cases. I was essentially thrown to the wolves and tried cases right out of law school. Maybe not all learning the right way, but enough. And I turned that into a career at Kessler and Soleimani. I've been there a little over 6 years now.
So you learned a lot, even though you might not have done it all the right way.
That's probably right.
Yeah. That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit more about the practice of Kessler and Soleimani. Why is now a good time for child support modification? Because you guys are practicing family law predominantly.
We do. Well, we practice exclusively in family law. And so let me back up a little bit on child support. There are many ways in which child support can be established: divorce, legitimation, paternity, just straight up child support action. In order to change the order in which child support is established, there has to be a material change in circumstances, term of art. But right now we're experiencing, as we do always this time of year, an influx of people wanting to modify because children are graduating. And when children graduate and older children are emancipated out of the house, Georgia courts have said that that's a appropriate grounds for modification of child support. So we're getting a lot, as we do always this time of year, people wanting to come back and say, okay, I don't have three minor kids anymore. I only have two. What can you do for me? And so then we start that process all over again of figuring out what child support is. It's usually easier to do second time around because finances have been established. But if enough time has passed, then the picture can look very different, and we can be in for another months, years of litigation.
Wow. So is it a good thing to go for modification, or does it happen more often than normal?
Well, I mean, it happens where appropriate, and I mean, it's always good.
You need an estate plan?
It's always good for child support to reflect the finances of the parties. And if time has passed and the situation is different, the child could very well be entitled to more child support. I mean, that's what a lot of people who come in forget, that child support is really for the child, and the legislature has determined what the levels are. If the parents make X, the child should be receiving, you know, Y. Mm-hmm. And
it can change, obviously.
Absolutely.
Somebody could lose their job.
Somebody can start making 10 times money. What they made as when the original child support order was established. Many things can happen. People can get remarried and, you know, to a millionaire, and they no longer have any bills of their own. So it runs the gamut of changed circumstance, and we're always happy and ready to help people figure out what the new situation should be.
Now, is a good case one that lasts a long time, or that you could possibly get it resolved pretty quickly?
Well, with child support modification, I mean, the first thing that we generally do is reach out to the former attorney or the former party if they were unrepresented, and just try to figure it out. You know, there are child support worksheets in Georgia that you can play with the numbers a little bit, but it is pretty static. It's pretty formulaic, and you can, you know, predict what the new number should be. So we'll reach out to that the party or the attorney and just suggest, hey, instead of going through months or possibly a year of litigation, let's just agree on what this new child support number is. Let's, you know, submit a consent order to the court. Let's do what we need to do. But if we're proposing to take away money from someone, that's usually doesn't go over so well. So
That's harder.
Yeah.
Other than child support modifications, are there other child support actions that your clients or that the listeners should be aware of?
I did want to talk a little bit about other child support as well. Very often we have people come in who were supposed to be receiving child support who haven't been getting the payments or haven't been getting full payments. And a lot of people have heard that, you know, that just entitles you to file a contempt against the other party and get eventually go into a lawsuit and start a you know, trying to collect that money. One thing that a lot of people aren't aware of, and which I've made a part of my practice, is an action for garnishment, which essentially is, I mean, the court has issued an order for support. You know, the amounts are clear. You can calculate the amounts. Instead of going in and telling the court, you know, basically, he didn't pay or she didn't pay, I'm entitled to this, let's have a trial and figure it out. A garnishment essentially does it all up front, and you take the money from someone's accounts or you garnish it from their wages, and it starts a lawsuit out on, you know, very aggressive means, and it's a lot easier to get quick resolution when you have, you know, garnish someone's money up front rather than waiting until a court decides, you know, what happens. Because garnishment is fully within the court's powers, just as finding of contempt, but it's a sort of upfront way to do it.
And you found that helpful, for sure.
I found it helpful when I'm filing the garnishment. I've found it very hard to overcome when my client has had his wages or his bank accounts garnished. I mean, it's abrupt and a quick action, and usually sets people back on their heels pretty good.
Makes them act.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So let's go over to, and this might also talk about child support as well, same-sex marriages. That's a pretty hot topic today. Well, for one, let's start off with what's happening in the state of Georgia right now.
Well,
as far as legalizing.
There is a case filed in the state of Georgia to challenge the, Georgia does have a constitutional ban against same-sex marriage. There is a case that's filed here. I imagine that, like most cases around the country, it's sort of suspended. They're not going to take any action on it while there's a U.S. Supreme Court case that is right in the middle of happening right now. I believe it's Obergefell versus Hodges. It's an Ohio case. There have been oral arguments on it. We are awaiting ruling, and it should be handed down in June. So everything I'm saying now could be just completely nixed or different. Have mm-hmm. me back on in July, and okay. we can talk about the fallout from it.
I have another guest.
essentially, depending on the outcome of that, all the state court bans that are existing still around the nation for same-sex marriage could go by the wayside. And that will have a big impact on not just the ability for same-sex couples to get married, obviously, but in terms of lawyers' practice, it will drastically change what we do for same-sex couples when they're dissolving their relationship. Instead
right.
of having to go through two, three different courts to deal with various issues of property, custody, and child support, they can now do what, unfortunately, the rest of us have to do and file for divorce. They will be
right.
able to do that.
Well, I know your firm stands on firmly on believing in same-sex divorce.
Yeah, my boss Randy Kessler has made that joke, of course, and you know, we handle dissolution of same-sex couples already, but I think it will just make things a lot more streamlined and easy
sure.
and cost-effective, because as I mentioned, if you have a same-sex couple with children, getting them apart is so much harder than just getting a opposite-sex couple divorced.
Sure.
So
sure.
We're looking forward to the ruling, and hopefully it goes the right way for, you know, regardless of political affiliations or whatever, but for ease of use and judicial economy, I think it'd be a great thing.
Yeah, so because a lot of same-sex couples adopt children.
Absolutely, they do, yeah.
And so it could be just as difficult when they separate.
Well, I think that a ruling from the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, on the issue will just generally help the tone of all matters of same-sex dealings, including children's issues, adoption, and support as well.
So in the practice of family law, tell me an alternative dispute resolution.
Well, my previous, the luminaries on the radio show have already discussed mediation and arbitration. That is a huge part of our practice as well. In fact, every case that we have before we see the inside of a final trial courtroom, we must go to alternative dispute resolution, be that mediation or arbitration. I've found that divorce attorneys, family law attorneys are getting very creative with that process and helped by the state of Georgia and various counties. Fulton County, for instance, has a judicially hosted settlement conference option, which is an alternative to formal mediation. And so it is essentially like mediation, but your mediator is a active senior judge in Fulton County. And you talk about someone with authority to help resolve cases. I mean, those things are super effective. And when you have a difficult client or a client who's difficult on the other side who needs to be reality checked, having a judge come in and say, yeah, what you're asking for is not likely to happen. It has a lot of oomph. And so Fulton County has made that happen. I believe other counties are exploring that, but Fulton right now is ahead of the curve. There have been former judges doing this for quite a while, just in private, sure, in private capacities. But now I'm seeing judges come off the bench and set up mediation practices all over the state.
I've seen that too, actually. Yeah.
Hey, Ryan McPherson here. Just a couple of questions about your practice and what you're doing today, and then kind of on the horizon, any cases that you're working on or things that you are looking forward to. You got another courtroom kind of battle coming up here in the future?
Well, I have a brief reprieve. We have the Family Law Institute in Amelia Island that starts, I'm driving down tomorrow, so I will be on the beach for the next couple of days.
Okay.
But that's sweet relief, because when I get back, I have three trials in the span of 4 weeks. So yeah, I mean, and nasty divorce, and these people have been trying to get divorced for 2 years. I inherited the case, and both, without giving away any identities or anything, both litigants are also lawyers. So, ooh, imagine the hostility.
This may be a fun courtroom battle for you, though, right?
Yeah. So we're looking forward to trying that one. Get back in town, and deposition after deposition is happening, and we're ready to get
it. Good
going.
Luck with that one. Again, you come back and tell us the story how that one wraps up, and hopefully you come out on the plus side.
You know, you should have a show that's just dedicated to war stories. You know, you'd have hours of endless entertainment.
Rich, put that on the show concept idea there.
Awesome. So tell me, where is the firm located?
So our main office is downtown at 101 Marietta Street, which is directly across from the State Bar, Suite 3500. We also have a satellite office in Sandy Springs that we love to take clients to who don't want to come all the way downtown, and there's free parking there, and it's quiet.
And do you work with other attorneys that give you referrals? Like, what types of professions also that does the firm work with?
Well, we take referrals from anywhere we can get them, sure. But we have great relationships with criminal defense attorneys and other disciplines, criminal law, I mentioned.
Probably estate planning attorneys, too.
Estate planning attorneys, it runs the gamut. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we're 15 attorneys in our office and growing. So we all have different various networks where we pull from, but yeah, estate planning, criminal law, DUI, it's all over the place. Employment.
Well, we've enjoyed having you back on the show, and we definitely will have you back to find out after the ruling.
Sure, I'm glad to be back to discuss that. There will be plenty of analysis and discussion all over the country, but I'm happy to contribute.
Absolutely. So just let our listeners know how they can reach you.
You can email me at sditzel, D-I-T-Z-E-L, at ksfamilylaw.com. Call me at 404-688-8810. And I don't think anybody's done this yet, but I do have a Twitter handle. And it got a laugh the last time I announced it, but it's at realseandditzel.com. And And there are no fake Sean Ditzels out there.
They're real. And I should say Sean is S-E-A-N.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, where people can find you on Twitter and hit you up there in the Twitter sphere.
That's right.
Okay.
Wonderful. Well, we so appreciate all of our guests being here today. It's been a great show today.
A wonderful show. Once again, a lot of expert legal advice coming out over the airways here in the Buckhead Radio X studio. So thank you, Emily, for being such a wonderful host once again. Always look forward to next week.
Yes, me too. We'll have some great things to announce for sure. This is Emily Rowell signing out, Atlanta Legal Experts Radio.